Welcome to Sassy. I'm Annie Murlowski and I'm your host. Each week we share the inspiring stories of female leaders throughout the tech industry. Thanks for joining us as we dive into the inspiring stories of career growth and development from women who are leading technology as we know it. Thank you so much for joining us today. We're going to have Andrea Galvez joining us to tell us a little bit about her background in software as a service. Thank you so much, Andrea.
I'm so excited to be here.
Well, let's start off by telling us a little bit about what you're doing now and kind of how did you get to the role that you're in?
Oh, wow. So I am VP of Client Success at Lionize. We're an all-in-one AI-driven influencer marketing platform, so MarTech SaaS. And I have had a little bit of a winding road on my path to SaaS. So I'm in CS. I have been running CS teams for a while now. But prior to that, really was a marketer by trade and got to that path just by accident. Like the first job you can find right out of school was in marketing. And so I stuck with it and have loved it, have loved to see how the world around us has changed in the 20 years I've been a professional. And this job wasn't a thing when I started. So I took a little bit of a winding path to get here. But now I help amazing clients set up and manage influencer marketing strategies and campaigns, which is a really fun space to be in.
That's awesome. Yeah. Influencer marketing, it hasn't even been around 10 years at this point.
Right.
So what's your perspective on the future of influencer marketing as a new channel?
Great question. So the thing I love about being an influencer marketing right now is it's still really early. So influencers are really establishing their worth and the value exchange between brands. And that is only going to build and increase. I think it's very cool to see the most recent report came out, I think earlier today, that 86% of young people want to be an influencer, which is, of course, it looks fun and amazing, but it is really hard work and incredibly valuable work for the brand. So, you know, I've stopped making predictions. This world is a crazy place, but certainly would make a bet on this space as continuing to grow and be more and more impactful for brands and influencers.
So then what was it when you were a child, what was it that you thought you wanted to be when you grew up, since it probably wasn't an influencer, not yet?
No. So there was a period where I really thought I was going to be a ballerina despite having no training whatsoever. So these are the fun things that you think you're going to be. The longest period, I thought I was going to be an artist. And then I did go and get in school, I got a communications degree with a graphic design concentration, nearly a double major. So my first few jobs right out of school in marketing had a design element or, you know, a part of my job that was graphic design. But I don't do that at all now. Like, I'm not even a big Canva user. So it's very interesting, people's paths to what they love.
Well, and do you think that some of that passion for art kind of gives you a perspective for how you view what you do today?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I mean, I think as an artist, it's very difficult to not see the world through your own lens or your own artistic lens. And so it's very easy to bring that into your day to day. So, I mean, from the like super mundane, which is like, I like to fix the margins in my PowerPoint presentations, but also really helps me like empathize with influencers who I work with on a day to day who have to be so creative. And I think no matter what your role is in tech today, you have to be super creative. So I'm pretty grateful that I got training in that.
Well, and that's not something that you can just learn how to do overnight either. It's that creativity it's like in you. It's in your soul almost.
Yeah. I mean, I think you can get good at making artistic outcomes, but like enjoying the process along the way and like having those things that are super impactful, I think it has to just be in you for sure. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, tell us a little bit about if there's a challenge that you've had to overcome and how did you do that?
Yeah, just in my career. I think the challenge I wanted to talk about today is really the step up, that first ladder from being an independent contributor to being like a team leader or even like a supervisor, and the brain shift that that requires. And this has just been top of mind for me, and not really sure why, but I thought I would talk about it because it's a really challenging moment in somebody's career where you have to really see the world differently. You have to see your job differently. You have to see your clients differently. You have to see your teammates differently. You have to see the people that report to you differently. And it's tough. And so I think you asked like, what was the challenge and then how did I overcome it? I don't think I did really well at this, to be honest, at the beginning. And then I was just managing people because I was a high achiever and in the independent contributor role, which is a very common, you know, career ladder that a lot of people find themselves in. But I didn't have really any management training. I really didn't know what I was doing. And I went and got an MBA, and my first course was on management, but it was really all about self-management. And that was a breakthrough moment for me to think like, oh, I need to like look inside and like manage what I'm doing in order to manage a team. That was a big moment of like perspective in my journey.
So what tips do you have for new managers that might be getting ready to take that step? Because you're right, like very rarely do you get trained to be a manager. It's just, hey, we're giving you a promotion. And part of that promotion is these three people that you're now responsible for. Best of luck. What would you say to somebody who's stepping into that for the first time?
Yeah, I would say seek out the training you need. So there are actual courses on this now, some of them that you can go to in like an afternoon online. It's so much easier to have access to people who know what they're doing, or join a community of people who are learning, join a cohort, or at the very least reach out to people even in your own organization that you think are doing this super well. And I would be very intentional in that choice, because just because somebody is successful in an organization doesn't necessarily mean they have the brand of leadership that you want. So I think it's important that you seek out the people who are doing it how you want to do it, or they're making people feel how you want to make people feel, so then they can help you through that learning curve.
So then how would you describe your brand of leadership?
I describe my brand of leadership as authenticity. So I'm just a really direct person in life. And that's something that I've brought into my leadership. And that starts not just with like being a direct human, but also opening myself up to my team, being really vulnerable and real about who I am as a human, not just as a boss, and like caring about them as humans too. And so I think that's something that is kind of rare in the corporate world. You have like bosses on pedestals, but I try and really break down that like separation, not in a way that doesn't feel like supportive, but just in a way that feels like they know who I am as a human.
That's awesome. I think that you're right. There are definitely, I think we've all had those bosses who are on pedestals that you go to your one-on-one because you're supposed to go to your one-on-one.
And you're terrified the whole time. You're like, oh, am I going to say the right thing? Yeah. Like I want people to be genuinely successful and whatever their definition of success means. So for instance, I've had people that are on my teams that have left the company, left the business, gone out and like opened their own bakery shops, which is really like not what I expected when they came onto my team. And people who have moved to other teams, people who have moved to roles within my team, and then people who have just grown into their own leadership. And that is really exciting to me and rewarding versus like we hit our numbers this quarter.
Oh, that's awesome. I think that I believe genuinely is a sign of a true leader, not just a paper leader, because you are entrusted with others' careers and you're entrusted with their path, and being able to say, you are following your passion, like go start your bakery and I want to see you succeed in that. And that's okay. And that's, I think it's very different from being, you know, numbers. It's all about the numbers. Well, it's a bummer that you're leaving. I guess I'm going to have to backfill you.
Right.
And those are not the same thing. And I think that's the kind of leader I want to be. So then tell me a little bit about how you maintain a work-life balance. And do you think that your experience as a woman is different from your male peers?
Yeah, this is fascinating to me, this question. So I'm going to jump to maybe the second part of the question first. There's a really good book. I highly recommend it for all of the listeners. It's called Invisible Woman, and it is really about the data bias in the world for men versus women. So if you're like, is there a difference in work-life balance for men versus women on an aggregate in the world? 100% yes. It's like mathematically proven. For me personally, I have made life choices that I think have opened me up to have a more equal work-life balance than my male peers, meaning I am childless by choice. I have a partner who's incredibly supportive. And that is a unique situation to be in. So the ways that I manage my work-life balance, not very well. I try to do better at this. And I think the culture that you're in really matters if they allow people to have lives outside of work or not. But I would say for those who are really struggling with this and maybe trying to find ways to open up spaces for themselves to be creative in their lives or even more successful in their jobs, boundaries are really important. And I'm not going to say I'm 100% at this all the time, but really understanding what the priorities are and what the outcomes are and knowing when to say no or knowing when to push back. And that's a really tricky thing, especially for people who are early career or maybe remote, maybe don't know their boss as well and can negotiate on, you know, their own behalf or feel like they can stand up for themselves. But learning how to do that or finding somebody who will help you or do it on your behalf is really important.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that it's a hard line, especially in our tech connected world. There was a time where you walked away from your desk and you were done for the day.
Yeah.
And that's just, we don't do that anymore. They say that most people check their email before they get out of bed in the morning. And for us, you know, email is work. And, you know, you're not just checking, you know, to see if you've got an evite for a holiday party over the weekend. It's everything. You check everything because you have to check all of those numbers and make them go away. At least I do.
Yeah. Yeah. No, for sure. It's so easy to get in the trap of doing that. And there is like a psychological reward of, oh, I did the work, you know? And if you're like me, if the, you know, women listeners of your podcast are like me, I like to work. Just admitting that is probably the first step of like, I enjoy what I'm doing and I find value and even some identity in the work that I do. And that makes it hard to step away from it, but you absolutely have to. And I have loved ones around me, my husband in particular, who is very helpful in like helping me moderate this, but it's very hard to step away sometimes. So I guess the second tip would be to be vocal with your loved ones and your friends about like your goals in terms of boundaries and work life, and they will naturally hold you accountable, sometimes in very unpleasant ways.
Which is good. We all need those people in our lives who are willing to do that. So let's like look a little bit more at what it's like to be specifically a woman in tech. Have you ever experienced bias as a result of being a woman in what is widely a male-dominated role?
Yes. I don't know a lot of women who could say no to that question. But 100%, and I've told this story before, and the situation I was in was kind of early in my junior leadership journey, and I had a team, I had deliverables, but I was also collaborating across the organization, right, with other teams. And I had a male colleague come to me and give me really strong feedback, which was incredibly biased. And I didn't know at the time that it was. And so it was really impactful because I'm the type of person that takes a lot of pride in my work, and the feedback didn't feel real to me. But I trusted this person and I respected them. And so I internalized that feedback. Now, luckily, I had a male colleague, a friend, who I was able to take that to and say, is this true? Is this feedback real? And he was able to help me navigate that situation. And I ended up sitting down with the male colleague who had given me feedback. And to make this like really contextualized, this was blocking a promotion for me. This was feedback that I had to address, get to the bottom of, correct and solve before I would be considered for the next level. So at the time, it felt very career ending. And luckily, this person, you know, was in good faith and we came to a conclusion. But it wasn't as simple as him being like, oh, I was biased, forget about it, right? But it really was biased. I do not today, and luckily my male friend Allie believes this and like supported me, I don't believe a male in my situation would have gotten that same feedback. And that's tough. And that's stuff, that's real life. That's stuff that we've all encountered.
Yeah. Absolutely. Sometimes there's stuff that you may not even realize it's a double standard until you start thinking about it or asking about it. And I think that that's the hard thing about when you internalize, you want to take whatever feedback you get in good faith. And sometimes it does take kind of walking it to someone else and saying, hey, do you see this? I want to grow. Help me understand kind of get that insight that, no, maybe this, but maybe not that. I think that those are, you know, you need those people that you can kind of lean on.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think feedback and growth is a really soft thing anyway. Like, it's mushy, it's hard to nail down. And so it's really easy to explain away of like, oh no, like that was that person's experience and therefore it must be true. But that is not always the case. But overcoming that is incredibly challenging. Like I said, I didn't come to him and say, hey, I think you're biased here. I just said, hey, I think maybe we don't see this from the same direction, right? So overcoming that, or just like getting people to see it for what it is, I think is the biggest challenge.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that that's where, when like you have the opportunity to do a 360 evaluation, I really like those kinds of work environments because you can get feedback from a variety of different people. And sometimes it's, you know, it's helpful to see, how do your peers see you? How do the people who work tangentially to you see you? How does your supervisor see you? And there aren't a lot of organizations that do that, but I feel like that can be really helpful.
Yeah, extraordinarily helpful. I think very difficult to action, and also sometimes challenging to interpret the results of that if you could get like conflicting pieces of feedback. But I do think worthwhile if done well, 100%.
Yeah, it definitely requires a really strong HR function who can kind of weed through it and make it into something that's valuable as a takeaway. And I think that's why a lot of orgs don't do it, is it's too hard to actually implement well.
Or, I mean, yes, and people, leaders who think that this is part of their job and are trained and equipped to do it well, which is just a really tall task for an organization to be able to say, yeah, all of my people leaders know what they're doing and care about it, right? Like, organizations don't reward people leaders for soft skills, like high quality feedback, high quality unbiased feedback. And so it's challenging to action because people just don't know how to put it in action.
Well, and that kind of goes back to what we were talking about before, is that we don't get trained to be managers unless you seek out training. And so feedback is something that we have to learn how to give as well as how to receive.
Yeah, 100%.
So when you're looking at a company, whether it be for a new job opportunity or just to partner with at an organizational level, what are some of the things you look at, and how do you determine whether or not you think it's a good fit with who you are and your personal values?
Yeah, I love this question. It feels really relevant to me because I have made a recent move. So I've been at Lionize about 6 months now. So I was just on the other side of this where I'm like, what kind of organization do I want to spend my time at? And I really prioritized culture, but not just like this squishy, like, yeah, I want culture. I think in SaaS and in tech, especially in like the startup world, the people who have founded the company and or the leaders of the current leaders of the company just wield so much influence. You could also say power. And so the personalities, but also the values of those people are really important. You can see that play out in the early stages of a company in the people that they hire, the way that they work together, the things that they prioritize that they spend money on or not. But you could also just talk to the people and say, what's important to you? Where do you want to build the company in? Like, what direction do you want to build the company into? What are the things that look successful to you? And if for me, they didn't prioritize, we want to be a fun place to work, I didn't want to work there. And so I feel extraordinarily lucky that Lion Eyes has two amazing founders who have prioritized culture and really made it a fun place to work. That doesn't mean that it can't also be incredibly successful. And in fact, if people like what they're doing, they are more likely to want to do more for the company. And so I actually think good culture feeds growth and success. But oftentimes in our world, those are kind of pitted against each other. So I prioritized the leaders of the organization. And then I prioritized some personal things for me, which is like, what industry was it in? We talked about influencer marketing and how I grew up in my career in marketing. So this was really a return home to my first language, so to speak, to come back to marketing. And then industry that is booming and growing and exciting. And I come to work every day, you know, interested in what I'm doing. And then the function or the growth opportunity. So it was a function I'm super comfortable in, but there's a huge amount of growth in the organization that I get to be a part of. I'm really honored to be able to do that and to lend experience and really help grow a company. So those were things that were important to me. For people who are looking, and I share this with people that I mentor, you really need to make those own priorities for yourself. There are three more. There's location. So this actually was pretty important to me. I wanted a remote only job. So that was actually number one. Money, which was less important to me, but of course that's very, very, you know, important. And then the third one is mission orientation. So a little bit different from industry, but like, what do they look to solve in the world? So if you prioritize those for yourself, it can be a little bit of a checklist as you're thinking about new opportunities. That's different than the part of your question about like companies I want to partner with. I would have definitely a different answer. I don't know if you want me to go into that.
Yeah. How would you answer that?
Well, I think that's different because you, as a business leader, I partner with other businesses that fill holes or needs in my current organization. So like, it's more about compatibility. Do they have, you know, the technology, the resources, the thing that I want? And as a CS leader, this is interesting that I'm going to say this, because I teach my team that if the people on the other side, our partners, if they just like you, if they like enjoy working with you, then like, it's not going to keep them. It's not going to be the decision for them to become a partner, but it might be the difference between them like being very excited about working with you and therefore being successful in that partnership. And so, yeah, I want to work with people that I like, that I enjoy being around, that I respect, and that I think really add something to the current business.
Well, and I think that that's something we don't get to think about like actively enough, is that so much of business, it's business, but it's also people and it's relationship building. And partnerships aren't just about what you can bring from a business perspective, but about how do you actually build that relationship between individual people? Because later you might become partners in a different atmosphere, or you might be in a different seat where you have different decisions to make. Or you just might want to build your network and have that person in your corner when you need that, or vice versa, to be in their corner.
Yeah, 100%. I passionately believe about the network effects in your personal life and in work life. Interestingly, I have felt like understanding networking at work is a little more explicit. You're like, okay, I'm going to get people's names. I'm going to, you know, maintain the relationship because there's a business imperative that I do that. I think in your personal life, it's a little bit easier to like let those relationships go because you're like, oh, I don't know that I need them in my life right now, unless you're like friends. And so I have found it's kind of magical when your partners or the people in your network become your friends. And so I try and think about it like that. And I've had countless clients who have started in a strictly business setting that I text regularly. I'm talking to them about their dogs and their jobs and their vacations. And we check in regularly because we like each other as humans. I don't know that there's necessarily a business why to that right now. And that's not why I'm doing it. But maybe, like, you don't know what the future holds. And so, like, building your network, maintaining your relationships, it's a lot of work. It is, but it is worthwhile, especially if you're somebody who enjoys building relationships with people.
Well, and they say that as adults, it's so much harder to make friends. And it's because we're not forced to sit at a lunchroom table with one another for 6 years.
Yeah.
All you have is your Zoom meetings. All you have is these 30-minute Zoom meetings that you check in and then you walk away. And there's no reason to not use those opportunities to build community and build friendships and have that world surround you.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is the easiest thing. It is, I know literally I just said it's hard because it is to maintain over time and space. But if you have meetings already set up, why not take 2 minutes at the top and just be like, tell me about yourself. Where do you live? Tell me about the Broadway posters in the background. Tell me about, you know, how you ended up where you currently are. Like, that's not hard. That's fun. But often we skip right over that. It's really easy to skip right over that.
It is. It is. And you have to be intentional. So as far as mentors in your career, you know, other kinds of community that you build, have you had any mentors that have helped shape your path for you?
So many. I have had mentors who did not know they were mentoring me at the time. I have had formal mentors that I went to and asked, and we followed a strict, you know, framework and structure. I have had bosses who I have asked to be mentors later, and otherwise people move and career and change. And I am summing it up this way because I think it's really important that people have multiple mentors in their lives and that they have mentors for different stages in their lives. And that doesn't mean you throw a mentor away. Some of my earliest mentors I still connect with and I get their advice, you know, at hard times. But the thing that I needed them for to grow, like that stage, was really intense for a moment. And they were there for me when I needed them. And now they can go be there for other people because I need them less. And so I think that this is true in professional growth and in personal growth. Like, if there are things that you want to do well in life, go talk to the people that are doing it well. And mentorship or versions of people helping each other can take all different forms.
Absolutely. And I love that suggestion of going and talking to people who do it well. Because sometimes that really forces you to go through the exercise of deciding what does well look like for me.
Yeah, which is so enlightening. And to have to put any kind of framework or rubric or anything around that, you very often surprise yourself. Because people are intuitive beings, right? So I want to be like this person that's really loud on LinkedIn, right? And then you go and measure the things that are important to you. And you're like, no, actually, I want to be more like Jim in accounting or, you know, something else. And so really understanding what it is that you are looking for, what's the next level of growth for you? And then going and, like I said, I'm just repeating myself, going and talking to the people who are doing it well. I think it's just so underrated. I just don't think people do it enough.
So what advice would you give a woman who's looking at starting off in SaaS or transitioning from another field into software and tech?
Yeah. Wow, this is big. I mean, I think I will start with kind of the themes that I've talked about already, which are find your community, find your mentors in all shapes and sizes, make sure your personal support network is built up and ready. I think transitioning from non-tech to tech or explicitly SaaS is extraordinarily challenging right now in the market that we're in. And so I would say, like, don't get discouraged. And I would also say almost everybody who's in tech today, at least those who have been in their careers for a while, like the often the people who are, you know, in more senior roles, didn't start in tech because it wasn't a thing, right? It wasn't the explicit thing or the market that they're in today. They started somewhere else. So there are so many transferable skills that you can bring into SaaS and tech. And it's really about defining those, making sure you can talk about them well, and then put them into practice once you get onto the job. That isn't to discard the importance of having valuable experience within SaaS. It is a very unique business to be in, and it's really important and valuable, but that doesn't mean you can't break in.
Well, and then let's close with a fun question right now. This can be either, you know, a book or a movie or a podcast. You know, what is kind of your must read or must listen that you're enjoying right now? And it doesn't have to be professional related. Could be just for fun.
Yeah, I'm like pretty into the Holiday Baking Championship. And I think the only person on the planet that didn't watch this during the pandemic. And so the joy of being able to go back to the original seasons and catch up. And so I love that. One of the best books I've read so far this year was Girl, Woman, Other. Highly recommend it. I also just recently went back and read Good to Great, which is a business related book, but it is, especially for leaders, indispensable. Highly recommend. So I'll give you three.
Awesome. Well, I completely agree. Good to Great it should be mandatory reading when you start into tech. Like, it really is such a good, I mean, it just resonates.
It's just so good. And it sticks with you. So highly, highly recommend.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate your time. And it was great getting to know you today.
Same. I had so much fun.
Thank you for joining us for today's episode of Sassy. Subscribe on your favorite podcast platform or join us on LinkedIn at Sassy Podcast to stay in the know about future episodes and guests.